Hi there, folks. It's Peter Broderick here. Thanks for tuning in to One Song Number 5. Today, our guest is the incredible Bridget May Power, who just so happens to be my partner. Bridget has been one of the most important people in my life, probably the deepest connection I've managed to forge with another soul outside of my own immediate family that I grew up in. And she also happens to be an absolutely incredible musician and songwriter. So I hope you enjoy this one with Bridget, and stay tuned for more next week.
What is a song?
Where do songs come from? What is the life of a song?
How much can a song morph and change before it becomes something else entirely?
What is the essence of one song?
Is it one song?
This is one song, one song, it's here. This is one song, this is one song, one song.
This is one song.
This is one song.
Bridget May Power. Hello, Bridgie.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I have three introductory questions for you that I ask everybody.
Okay.
How many years have you been on this earth? Where in the world are you now? And what was the last meal that you ate?
I've been on the earth 34 years. I'm upstairs. Oh, I'm in Spittal, County Galway. And last food I ate was lentil tagine at 9 a.m. So.
Mm-hmm. Breakfast of champions.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're upstairs where we obviously live in the same house. We're married. Oh, yeah. That's right. For those
Internet's
who are
working surprisingly well.
Yeah. For those who are only listening, we were just showing our wedding rings on screen. So if you heard an awkward silence there, that's what that was. But yeah, we thought about if we should just record this sitting next to each other on a couch, but the Zoom thing seems to make sense because it puts the whoever's speaking on the screen, which we just don't have enough cameras to do. And then it would take a lot of editing and stuff. So we realized that this would be easier, as ridiculous as it seems that you're upstairs and I'm down here and we're having a conversation.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, very strange. Well, I think it would be nice to give people a little bit of a background of how we met. Do you want to tell a bit of that story, or do you want me to tell it?
Sure. Well, I mean, whatever you prefer. We can both give our own versions.
Sure. Why don't you go first?
Well, I was asked to, sorry, I'm trying to get used to these headphones. They're really weird.
Are they?
Little headphones you gave me.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, I can't hear myself, I think. Which is
right.
Weird. Anyway.
You could take one out if you want.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's better. Well, yeah, it was 2014. I was asked to support you in Cork, in, what's that, the Half Moon Theatre?
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't think I'd heard of you before, but all of my friends were like, oh my God, it's Peter Broderick. That's amazing. And I was really excited because it was the first gig that I was paid like really well. And they were putting me up in a hotel and I was really excited about it. And then I remember I got there for the sound check and you were on the stage, and I always remember, this is the first thing I remember about you, that I said, I hate when the feeling comes up that I need to burp just about when I'm just about to sing. And you said like, oh yeah, this is what you do. You feel it coming up and you just go to the side of the mic like. And that was always the first thing I thought, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about.
He knows how to burp just far enough away from a microphone that it doesn't get into the song.
Yeah. It was a helpful tip. I was like, okay, I'm gonna remember that one.
Okay. Well, glad to be of service there, Bridgie.
Is that a romantic story of how we met?
Well, I mean, in my mind, the story is more romantic, actually. Because I was, but you know, I'm a romantic kind of person. So it's all in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? I think so. Well, okay. So this is how I see it. I was on a tour with a full band around Europe in 2014. And we had a support act with us as well. And the support act was doing all the support for all the shows. And we were in Manchester and we were meant to play in Dublin and Cork the next couple of days after that. But there was a big storm over the sea and all the ferry boats got canceled. And so we weren't able to make it to Ireland. And so I think we made it to the Dublin gig, but the Cork gig didn't happen. So I had to reschedule the gig. And what I did was I rescheduled it for after the whole tour was over. And so I finished the rest of the tour with the whole band, and then they were all from Switzerland. So we ended up in Switzerland. They all stayed there. The support act that was traveling with us flew home, and I flew over to Cork and did the rescheduled version of the gig. And then for that gig, they got an Irish local support, and that was you. So without this storm over the sea, we wouldn't have sort of been put together on that night. Mm-hmm. I think that's very romantic.
Yeah, it is. And, oh no, I can't say that. That's too. I might keep that to myself.
Will you tell me later?
Yeah. It was just something that, like, to do with, like, I remember I had a few, like a month or two before, I'd kind of read this, you know, kind of tacky self-help book that said to write down what you want in a partner.
Right.
And I pretty much written down you.
Wow.
And then I met you the month later.
Do you want to say what you wrote down?
I wrote down like touring musician. I wrote down American. Wrote down like gentle. Yeah, I don't know why. You know, it's probably biased of me to write American.
No, but you've always.
I wrote down your personality. Like,
wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. But you've always kind of had a fascination with America and kind of wanted to spend lots of time there, haven't you?
Yeah, it's always kind of felt like my home, really.
Your grandmother was born there.
Yeah, she was. She was born in Brooklyn, and her parents are Irish, and then she came back to Sligo when she was three. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I have a lot of she has brothers and cousins that are out there, and I don't know, just the first time I ever went over there, I just felt like, I don't know. But yeah, it was, I think I liked so much American music, and yeah, I just really always enjoyed and felt at ease when I was there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After, you know, after living in Europe for so long myself, because when I left America at age 20, I thought, you know, oh, here's my ticket out. I get to leave America and go to Europe where, you know, in again, my mind was very romantic. I was seeing myself in the nice European cafes, drinking coffee and touring around. And but after spending enough time over here in Europe, I sort of started to appreciate America more again, and see that there's a certain kind of openness there that that's not here in Europe. Like, because it's such a big land with so much open space, and you know, I guess you know, it's the what we call America now, I guess, was founded by people who were trying to get away from, you know, the whatever was bogging them down here in Europe, right?
Right.
But so,
Be careful here now.
Well, right. I mean, I
oh, you're frozen for me.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, obviously I don't see the Europeans who went to Europe as the first people of America. That's a much complicated story, and they're, you know, but yeah, anyway,
sorry.
Go ahead. Sorry.
There's a tiny bit of a delay for me. Yeah, there's definitely an energy there of like, you're on your own kind of thing. Like, and that can be good and bad. Like, but there, when you're like young, like I was, I really liked the pros of that. Like, I'm on my own. I can do what I want sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, sort of, it's up to you to make your contacts and your whatever. And
yeah.
Does that make any sense? Like, yeah. you know, a little less bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can sort of escape it more. Like, you just literally can. There's more places to hide.
Yeah, yeah, literally. I remember being on a train there once from... because I went on this crazy train ride around the whole country. And I did a ride from Chicago to Texas. And then I went from Texas to California on the Amtrak. And I remember, like, the driver being like, if you look to your left, you're going to see some crazy hippies that live in the caves.
Wow.
And I looked, and we all looked to the left, and there was, like, these huge canyons, and, like, right, really, really far down, they were just like little ants. You could see people in little boats. And basically, they were just, like, people that lived in the caves there.
Wow.
And I just thought, wow.
So after that experience, you came
home. Place to hide.
And within a couple of years, you wrote down American on your wish for your partner.
Cave dweller.
Yeah, American cave dweller. Well, I'm not quite a cave dweller, honey, but I am American.
You're quite close to a cave dweller.
Closer than some, yeah. But anyway, so that was how we met. And then after that first show we met, we did a few more shows together the following year. I was coming back over to Europe, and I invited you to join me for 5 or 6 more shows, or 4 or 5, something like that. Then after that, so in the beginning, it was actually just like a touring musicians relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at the end of that tour that I think it kind of became a little something more. And then you came out to Oregon that summer to do some recording, which became your self-titled album.
The Bridget Mayhower. I changed my, because before that I was going by Bridget Power Rice, which is my full name. And then I changed it to my middle name and just Power, and then to the self-titled album. But yeah, that was an amazing experience. Like, my God.
Cool.
Going out to Oregon. You know, I had to scramble. I don't know if you remember, but like I had to really, like I was just single mom on the single mom payment. And like I had to find someone to mind Sean for like 10 days. He was only 4.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was really so. And then when I got there, I just was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I just loved it.
Yeah, we had a good time, and I became sort of obsessed with those recordings. I mean, you were there for like 10 days and we did as much as we could while you were there. And then you left and I sort of dove in and worked on them some more myself and was sending you versions to see what you think. Mm. And I was very deeply immersed in that music. And so, okay. So the song we're going to talk about today is called Don't Shut Me Up Politely in brackets.
And you better believe it.
Yeah. So this isn't on the first album. This is on the second album, The Two Worlds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, you have it there in the corner. I see.
Yeah, I've got it here. I've got it here, the CD and the vinyl. So do you... Let me let you take it away. What do you remember about... I want to hear you tell the story of how that song came about. I know the story, but what I think is hilarious is that the message of the song, I think a lot of people jumped to conclusions about what the song was about, considering when it was released. When did this come out? 2017 or 18? Something like that?
Yeah, it was just before all the Me Too stuff.
Right. But it was kind of circulating around the time. A lot of these social injustice issues were sort of being widely discussed all over the internet. And I think a lot of people jumped to conclusions of what this song might have been about. But I'd love for you to just tell the story that led to writing this song, if you want to.
Well, first of all, in hindsight, it is about all those things, but I'd say it's more of an embodiment, you know, rather than I didn't set out to write a song about social injustice. But I was embodying those things. And also, secondly, I think it's amazing how art does that, like that, you know, it'll kind of take off and have a different meaning for other people, and
right,
you can't control it. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So in a weird way, I can see why people jump to those conclusions, because my feelings of you know, being oppressed and being fed up and having been in abusive kind of situations in the past, all that boiled up. And those feelings come out in the song. Maybe they're not
right.
You know what I mean? But anyway, I'll tell you what led me to writing that song. I'll give a bit of background.
Sure, please.
Yeah. Okay. So I was like 2010. I had my child Sean, and I was a single parent and. In Galway, and like Galway then, even though it's not that long ago, it definitely was a different place. Like there was a recession going on, you know, like loads of buildings in town, like you wouldn't recognize it. They were all shut down. Like it was kind of a depressing time. Like wasn't vibrant like it was now. Like you'd be back then, you would have a hard time finding somewhere to get like a nice meal. As hard as that is to believe, like there's so many cafes and buzzing stuff in Galway.
Yeah.
Back then it was really like everything was shut down. And, you know, rents were like, you know, rents are triple the price now than they were then.
Right.
But it also was very, it was still, I felt, found it oppressive. And like, even when I gave birth to my son, at the time I didn't realize it, but now I see there was a lot of prejudice to single mothers. I was 24, which isn't that young by like our grandparents' standards, but right. by, you know, it was
these
kind
days.
Of, yeah, these days it's young. And so I, in, you know, even in my birth experience, like when I would make a loud sound, like the doctor was like, no sounds out of you, stop that. And
wow.
You know, it was a different kind of, there was still a lot of churchy vibes.
Yeah.
And that really kind of weighed on me. And so like, you know, there was obviously lovely people in town who were really nice to me and Sean and stuff, but there was a lot of judgment. And in the doctors I would meet, or the public health nurses or the hospital or the creche people, or, you know, I was kind of coming up against this energy all the time, which was sort of indirectly shaming me. So it wouldn't ever be like upfront saying, it was just all invisible, you know? And, and then I had, you know, experienced that energy in a lot of family and relationships as well. And I just kind of had enough of it. And then, so this is where the story comes, is that I was in the library.
Yes.
And the library in Galway was like one of those only places you could go when with a kid, you know, because it was raining all the time. So it'd be like, we'll go into the library and we'll take out a book. And so let me try to get this right. There was one book that I had taken out. It was like a Thomas the Tank Engine book for Sean. And he was like two or three. And I just couldn't find it anywhere. Like, it just completely gone. And I went back into the library, and funny enough, actually, I won't say her name, but she has a similar name to mine.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, look, I'm really sorry. I just can't find it anywhere. We lost it. It might have fallen out the buggy or something. It's just gone. And she was, I said, can I pay for a replacement? And she was like, no, sorry, we just need the actual book. And I was like, no, but it's gone. It's completely gone. I don't know where it is. And she's like, I can pay whatever amount it is. She's like, no, we're just going to need that actual book. We're going to need it.
Ooh.
And I was like, listen, like, I don't have the book. I'll give you €100 right now. I don't have that book. I could buy you five of that book. Like,
yeah.
Just let me out of this weird thing that's going on. She was like, I'm just going to need that book. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to need that exact book. And I just, it was like the icing on the cake for me of the previous years. And
yeah.
You know me enough that that's kind of what I rocked all of a sudden. And I think I just freaked out in the library. I just like freaked out at her. I was like, you're not letting me, you're not giving me a way out here. I'm trying to do my best.
Rectify.
So then I went, yeah. And it was, I know it was kind of symbolic of that energy that I was always fighting and resisting. I like things direct. I like to know what someone's thinking. I don't like little games or stuff like that. So I went home and I wrote that song to not shut me up politely. Like, I don't remember the lyrics, but it's like, underhand, things underhand. Yeah. I just don't like it.
If there's one thing I can't stand, it's your dealing with everything underhand.
Yeah, that's you, library lady. Like,
so it was the library.
Tell me.
The library lady was like the straw that broke the camel's back. It was like a feeling So in a way, yeah, going back to like people associating this with broader social injustice movements, that really does fit, doesn't it? Because even though it was the library lady that you know struck the final match on that fire to write the song, like it was already, you know, it was already brewing.
Yeah, it was brewing. There was a lot of shame and there was a lot of, oh yeah, I'm getting fired up now thinking about it.
Well, I don't know if you remember, but years later, I had a funny experience in the Galway Library. Do you remember this?
Yeah. I mean, it was a kind of passive aggressive thing.
I'm going to tell it just so that in case the Galway Library hears this, maybe they'll get their act together.
Or maybe they'll ban us. So that's
yeah. Or yeah. Did we ever figure out if it was the same lady or not?
No, we didn't.
Okay. Well, so what happened was I was there with Sean. He was maybe six, maybe seven. And he was there his school had gone there for like the end of the day and we had to go and pick him up from there. When I got there, it was him and a bunch of kids from his class. And he was in the corner of the library with another boy who I won't mention his name, but he was a bit, sometimes we were worried maybe he's a bit troublesome or about.
He was kind of encouraging,
yeah,
you know, Sean to kind of do, you know, Sean was trying to impress him and
yeah,
kind of do like quote unquote naughty things.
Right. So they're in the corner and like, you know, I can tell they want a little more time together. So I'm just kind of, you know, meandering, waiting for Sean to be ready to go. But at some point I look over and see that actually what they're doing is they've got a stack of My Little Pony books and they're going through them, ripping the pages, just like slowly, like looking at each other in the eyes and like ripping slowly each page. So I go over and I'm like, what the heck is going on here, guys? And I go up and I don't remember if I went to the librarian there. I think what I did was I took the book and I said, I'm just going to bring this home. I'm going to order another copy and then I'll bring back the new copy, you know? So they won't even know what happened. So I did that. I brought the book home. I went online and I found, you know, a copy of this My Little Pony book. It's the only time I've ever purchased anything My Little Pony related, folks.
You should have talked to me before you did this. I could have told you.
Yeah, so I know I should have. And I think I already knew the story about the library, but for some reason I didn't put two and two together. So I ordered this book. It arrives a couple weeks later and I bring it in with Sean. And I'm like kind of like, well, you know, since Sean was the one who ripped the book, I'll get him to come in with me and deliver, you know, the new book. So I'm like, Sean, you know, this is the right thing to do, bud. You know, they're going to be so happy if you hand them this book, you know? So I go in with Sean and we hand the lady the book and I tell her what happened and here's the replacement book. And she looks directly at Sean then and says, "Now you won't ever do anything like that again, will you?" And she tried to shame him then further. Yeah. It was like she was not interested in sort of bringing a nice conclusion to, well, that was a bummer, but I'm so glad we solved it like this. You know, that's what I thought was going to happen. But instead, she wanted to dwell on the shameful aspect, the shameful moment. And I walked
out. There's no redemption there. No
redemption.
There's no way to be redeemed. Yeah.
And I walked out completely infuriated. And I was like, Sean, I'm so sorry. I was like profusely apologizing to him because I just made him go through this experience of someone shaming him when I thought he was going to be rewarded. Anyhow,
that's the psyche, like, it's kind of old. Yeah, I don't know even how to describe it, but it's very familiar.
Yeah.
And it just, wouldn't that make you want to rip another book if you're a kid?
It would.
You know?
Even as an adult, I'd like to go in there and rip a few books.
Yeah, it wouldn't make you respect, like, you know, you'd just be like, well.
No. This kind of thing doesn't engender respect. You can't demand respect, right? You have to you have to earn it, and it's a two-way street, mutual respect, not authoritative demanding of respect.
Yeah. Maybe it's changed, you know. I think it's definitely changed since he was small here, but yeah.
Well, that's the library situation for you, and that's
yeah.
So,
well, like thanks him in the end, because I wouldn't have written that song, you know.
He got a good and song out of it.
Now I have a song that if I'm ever feeling angry or, you know, bit Leo like, I can just play that song.
Yeah, great. Well, what do you remember about the recording of this song, because it eventually got released on this album, The Two Worlds. What year is this? It's 2018 it came out. What do you recall about it?
Yeah, we recorded it 2017, didn't we? I remember that we were on tour, well, you did some of the gigs, but I did all the gigs. We were on tour with Riley Walker, remember?
Yes.
Around Ireland, and then we, was it before? No, it was after the Belfast gig, we went down to Julie McLarnon in Analog Catalog.
Analog Catalog Studio, yeah.
But was that the second? Oh, because we went up there twice, didn't we? And we went.
Yeah.
We did two bits.
There were two sessions, yeah. And you had kind of.
I don't remember.
You had this idea of recording entirely analog, because, you know, the first album we had done on a computer out at my little studio, and you've always really loved the sound of like those warm analog recordings. So we found Julie in the North of Ireland, and
it was Alistair Roberts that put me in touch with her.
Yes,
because he'd always said, "Oh, you should record with Julie."
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so he put me in touch, and then we went up, and it was beautiful there. I remember being really nervous, but I remember about that song. Did we do guitar and drums together, I think?
We did, yeah.
Yeah, and then I remember you all being downstairs when I did the vocals.
Okay.
And when there was a middle bit, and then I remember Julie just being like, "Oh, here we go. She's gone all Moroccan again."
Really?
In the bits that are like, "Hi."
Yeah.
That's what I remember mostly about that song. I mean, it's nowhere near Moroccan, you know.
I can see that thread though in Julie's mind.
Yeah. So I remember that, and I remember us sitting down there being like, "Oh, this is cool." Because I don't really do that many songs with electric guitar, but when I do, it changes my sound, I think.
Yeah.
Entirely. And I want to do more songs that have that kind of energy, but I set out with the intention to, but they always end up being more acoustic or folk.
Well, you need something to really piss you off again first.
Maybe I'm just too happy. Gotta change that.
Yeah. We can Oh, it sounds weird to say I can help you with that. I don't like that.
You can. You know how to prod me.
Yeah, I'm learning.
No, I'm just joking.
So that song came out on this 2018 album, and there also was a music video to accompany the song, which I would love to play for people in a moment here. Would you like to say anything about the music video?
My lovely friend Kate Glavy recorded it, and we went out to Connemara. Me, Kate, my little sister Evie, who's exactly 10 years younger than me, to the day, Ross Hamer, Aoife Light, and Adrian Crowley. I think that's everyone.
Mm-hmm.
We just went out and stood. And when we got there, you know, typical Galway, it was a beautiful day. And we climbed up the mountain, and then it started lashing rain. Like,
yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and then Kate added all the different things. But you edited it, actually.
I did some editing, of Kate's footage. Yeah. But she also did a bunch of green screen stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a really weird video, but I think it's really good. I really like it.
I really like it, too. just for people who might not know, because you mentioned Connemara, if there's people living abroad that might not know what Connemara is, this very wild, rugged area in the west of Ireland that has a lot of
stony kind of hills and
a lot of places barren. That still speak Irish as well. It's a beautiful, very unique kind of landscape and vibe out there.
Mm. And I remember we got so wet, like you can't even believe how wet we got. And then we went into the local pub and we all took off our tights. Like I had a skirt and I took off my tights. We all took off our socks and shoes and we sat by the fire in the pub.
Yeah.
And we dried them all off and we had toasted cheese sandwiches. And it was really nice.
Yeah, it sounded like a lovely day. I was away somewhere, so I couldn't make it. But I remember you were beaming after that day of shooting that thing. And it was it Kate who had the idea of just people hugging?
Yeah, it was her idea. It was lovely. It was about, I should have asked her because I don't remember the exacts, but it was like hugging in circles, you know.
That's right.
A circular movement as well. Her plans for it were really lovely. I should have asked her about them to remind myself. But there was a lot of meaning in it for her. And then there's lots of shots of wells, you know.
Yeah. And there's I won't go too deeply into this, but there also was there's some chickens put in towards the end and there was someone we were in contact with at the time who thought these chickens made the video too silly. And I got into a weird conversation about, you know, but the chicken is a very symbolic creature and we always disrespect the chicken and we should. But at the end of the day, there is something comical about a chicken sort of appearing on the screen.
But Kate's intention for the chicken was like, she had all these meanings.
Yeah.
All these kind of chicken meanings that.
All right.
Like traditional chicken. But like the label, just like, they were like, this is my older label. They were like, we're not showing that. We're not even going to retweet that video.
Well, that's their prerogative, I suppose. But I like those chickens.
Yeah, me too.
So should we show people this video?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Just a moment here. There it is. That's the song.
Wow.
That's the video for those who are watching. Wow, I hadn't seen that in a while myself. Or heard it.
I really like it.
Yeah,
I like it. I remember remember that bit where I was like, you're not allowed to do the close up of my face.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you feel about it now?
I still hate it. If it was someone else, I'd probably think it was cool or it was funny, but I never want to see my mouth that close up.
Mm. I really like it still. So that's the recording of the song. That's the music video. Do you have any particular memories of like then, you know, bringing this song onto the stage on tour? Is there anything else that you would associate with the song?
It's a song that if I'm up for it and I'm playing it live, like I really love playing it live.
Mm.
Sometimes it's a song that if I'm not feeling it, it's like, oh, it's a lot of energy. Like it takes a lot out of me, you know?
Yeah, I can imagine.
And sometimes people have came up to me after gigs or something asking about, you know, like using that song and then trying to delve into my personal history, which I have been quite open about. But you know what it's like if you're just about to go on for a gig or after a gig, you're kind of vulnerable, and in ways sometimes you're not ready to, like, you just want to small talk with people. You might be not ready to just delve deep into things.
And
it's quite a deep song, so it's like, yeah, it takes a lot of energy out of me in all kind of ways. But I do really, but if I'm in the right frame of mind for it, I do love to play it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Have you got memory of it?
Well, I've always loved playing that song on the drums because it has this real momentum to it, you know. And it can kind of, like you know, a lot of the time with your songs, when I'm playing the drums along, I'm quite reserved, you know, because the music is not super loud, and I'm doing my best not to sort of to stay underneath the song. And I think actually that's one song where I have gotten carried away in the past, because I'm getting so into the momentum of it that I think that's the song that, you know, you would occasionally be trying to catch my eye on stage, because I'm literally running away with the song, bum 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 bum, just rocking out to my
And I'm like, shut up. No.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't say that, but yeah, I've noticed that, like, it gets really, really loud, and then all of a sudden I can't hear myself at all.
Or it speeds up too much, you know? That happens sometimes as well. But I've always really loved playing that one.
But that's cool as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as we can stick with it. And I think even on that recording, it speeds up as it goes along.
That's all right, though, isn't it?
Yeah, like, it is.
I never have been one of those people that minded that. Like, as you know, with my recent recordings, I've been doing. People will say, "Oh, it gets faster towards the end, or it slows down, or it kind of peaks." And I never saw what the problem was. That it's like,
it's real,
like going
it's
for a run and slowing down a bit, and then getting faster again.
Yeah,
you know.
Absolutely. Go with the flow.
Yeah.
Well,
totes.
Bridgie, do you, this is where I might surprise you a little bit, because actually we did record this song before Julie's.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was originally a part of the batch of songs that you brought over to the States for your first album. We recorded it there, but for some reason, you know, there were enough songs that we didn't have to use all of them. And this one didn't make it on to the album. But there was actually, and I always wondered if anybody picked up on this, because there was a one minute snippet of that recording, which went on an EP of yours called The Ones You Keep Close. The Ones You Keep Close, this little guy I'm holding up right here. There's a the first track on here is just called Shut. And it's a one little snippet of that. And so I wonder if we might play that
I
for
like
people
that
now.
Snippet. Yeah.
And when you said that Julie said, there she goes all Moroccan again, I think in this little clip especially, I can kind of hear that somehow. I don't know. So so I wonder if anyone else ever picked up on this, that this was a little snippet of that same song, but from a different session. Let me show it to you here. That's cool.
Yeah. I really like what you did with all the stuff in that, you know.
Yeah, there's some strings.
We should do more stuff like that sometime.
I love trying to match some of your those wild kind of dancing melodies, to match them in unison on a string instrument.
It's
a really cool effect, I think.
You know, it's interesting that people hear the Eastern kind of thing, because obviously I don't have any connection, but I think a lot of Irish singing, you know, Seanos singing, like stuff that's kind of in me is really, there's like, it's really sounds similar to some of those Eastern.
Yeah. I would go as far as to say that, like, most sort of singing styles that have come out of a sort of ancient indigenous traditions, I see a thread through them all.
They're similar,
you know what I mean? Sometimes I'll hear like, you know, a Native American song or something, and then I might hear a song from some completely different part of the globe and recognize what feels to me a sort of similarity in the way the melody dances or something.
Maybe it's just a human sound. But they all uniquely have their own things as well. Like I love Indian singing, you know.
Yeah, me
so
too.
Intricate. And but yeah, some there's similar yeah there's similarities with I just really like also the wordless sort of singing.
Yes.
Or extending out words, you know. Like,
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, I in preparation for this, I went back to see if I could find the original session where that first version of this song was recorded. And I did find it. I would love to play it for people. We can always cut it out at the end if you think it, if you feel really not great sure. about it. But the thing I love about this is there's a priceless little bit of dialogue between you and I before before we go into the song. Yeah. It's, you know,
okay.
We're obviously, we haven't known each other that long at that point. And,
but wait, when did we record this? Was this not with when me and Sean were visiting, like with David?
No, it ended up on the EP with those songs, but it was originally recorded
the first time
you came out in 2015.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we really hadn't known each other for that long. And I think the spot I'm going to jump us into here, we had, you had sort of tried a take or two of the song and then, I think maybe you had stopped midway through a take and you were tuning up your guitar and you and I are speaking a little bit.
Cool.
And then we played the song, but I don't know if you remember, I didn't remember until I pulled up the session of this song, but I was playing the guitar along with you. I had an electric guitar and I got you to teach me what you were playing and I was just doubling what you were doing.
I remember that. Yeah.
But I don't know if it worked out that well. I never quite got competent on it. And there's a moment in this recording here where I just drop out because I lose my spot or whatever. So when you hear something kind of drop away, it's me. And the funny thing is actually, you can't really hear it, but if you do listen close enough, you can actually hear me say like, sorry. And I was trying to get your attention, but you didn't even notice and you just kept right on playing through the song.
Oh, really?
I just made like a really quick mix of this song. So for all intents and purposes, it's just should be considered like a demo or something, you know?
Okay. I'm scared.
Yeah. If you think it's not worthy, then we'll take it out for sure. But otherwise I think we can leave people with this, unless there's anything
let's have a listen.
You want to say about the song?
About the song.
Or for anything else for that matter, it'd be nice to maybe, if there's anything you want to say about what you're working on now or like where you would send people to find your music or find you or anything like that.
I'm working on an EP of cover songs. I don't know when that's going to be out yet, but, you can find me on, I guess, all the usual places. And I have a website, bridgetmaypower.com. Just thanks for having me on. Thanks for finally, listening to my constant nagging of, when am I going to be on? When am I going to be on?
Oh, you weren't nagging me. Nagging me at all. No, I always wanted to have you on right from the start.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you, Bridgie. And let me just, I hope I don't spoil it here with a recording that you hate. Let me see. But I just think the dialogue at the beginning of this is priceless. So I hope you like it too.
I sing that song when I'm like feeling angry, it's a lot better, but when I'm not, it's a bit hard to like.
Should I do something to piss you off?
Yeah.
God, I don't want to.
You couldn't do it. It wouldn't work anyway.
Yeah, it probably just wouldn't work. I've got songs like that too.
Yeah.
Where they really only work in when I'm angry.
Yeah.
Just don't be afraid to just let it out, channel it, let it through.
Yeah.
I'm not scared.
Okay.
Yeah. I just think that's beautiful.
It's, I feel like my voice sounds really different on the verses anyway. I can hear that I can hear that I wasn't relaxed, you know.
Right. Yeah, well, yeah, we didn't know each other that well. You might have felt a bit nervous or something, you know.
Well, I also remember it brought back feelings for me that I remember for so long playing that song. I felt guilty saying those words even. You know, I felt guilty for expressing that, which is interesting because I don't know, but you know.
Yeah.
So I felt like, you know, it was kind of hard for me. Yeah.
What I hear in that though is that I think I can hear what you mean about the resistance, baby. But I hear like that. I hear like your soul comes out anyway. Like it finds its way through whatever restriction might be there, and emanates anyway. And that's something that I felt from the first moment I saw you play. Is like I felt like you would open your mouth and this essence would just like pour out, this very strong thing would just pour out, and that's what blows me away.
Are you saying I'm possessed?
Yes, it's the demon inside that comes out anyway. Possessed with beauty, yeah. Richie.
Oh, you flatter me.
Well, thanks again for doing this.
Okay, thank you for having me. I can't see my face anymore. Yeah. Is it gone?
Can you not? No. Maybe because I did that. Can you see it now?
Yeah.
There you are. Okay. I love you, dear. Thank
love you.
You too.
All right. That's going to for sure make sure no one ever tunes into me and you again.
Yeah. Let them. Bye, everyone.
Okay. Bye.